Hello, and welcome to NatSec Tech, a podcast from the Special Competitive Studies Project. I'm Jean Meserve, and it's great to have you with us. Startups in defense-related technologies often complain about something they call the Valley of Death. It refers to the gap between research and development and getting a government contract. It's a period when many enterprises go belly up. To fill this gap and gaps in defense technology, in 2022, the consulting firm Booz Allen Hamilton started an investment fund, Booz Allen Corporate Venture Capital. The president and CEO of Booz Allen Hamilton, Horacio Rosansky, sat down with me in front of a live audience during SCSP's first ever AI Expo for National Competitiveness to talk about the fund and a lot more.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Gene.
Really appreciate it. So before we get to the investment fund, we have a lot of young people at this AI Expo, a lot of them curious about career paths in the national security space. You were born in Argentina.
Correct.
Came to the U.S., started as an intern at Booz Allen Hamilton, and now you're president and CEO. How did you do that?
Luck.
And work.
And work.
And smarts.
And I'm probably not a good interviewer, so I never could get another job, so I stuck with Booz Allen for over three decades. No, in truth, I fell in love with Booz Allen. I first fell in love with this country. I was 19 when I came to go to school in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, of all places. Loved it there. Got a real taste of the the goodness of the American Midwest. Then went to Chicago, joined Booz Allen as a summer intern, as you said, and fell in love first with the profession of consulting, then with the people of Booz Allen, and ultimately with the missions that we support. And I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
But how do you get from intern to CEO?
I do believe part of it is luck, right place, right time. But I think a lot of it is taking advantage of every opportunity that comes your way, looking for things to do that interest you and that can make a difference. I always say, early on in my career, I was interested in getting promoted, and I wasn't getting promoted. And then I became interested in learning things. And the good news about that is I had much more control over that. And I learned a ton of stuff. And some of it got me promoted too. But it's been much more rewarding because I really do love learning. I always say every day I'm at Booz Allen, I learn something new. I've been here now for almost 32 years. So the day I feel I stop learning, I'll probably go do something else with my life.
You haven't stopped yet. And you have been racking up the frequent flyer miles, doing a lot of traveling around the world, which probably is giving you an interesting vantage point on the state of international competition in the tech space in particular.
Absolutely.
What have you learned?
So I had the opportunity to travel recently to Taiwan. I had never been there. I went back to Japan a couple of weeks ago, and I was just in Honolulu for the change of command. Really looking deeply at the issue of deterring China and what it's going to take to do that.
And what did you deduce it will take?
So one of the things I learned, and I've been obsessed with this topic for a while, but this crystallized it for me. If you look at both Taiwan and Japan, they see an imminent threat. For Taiwan, it really is all about China across the straits. For Japan, it's not just China, it's Russia, it's North Korea, and China. And there's a sense of urgency in the region that I hadn't seen before, I hadn't heard of before, and urgency is important. The problem is that urgency is not translating into speed. We have not found a way, they have not found a way, and we as allies have not found a way to help accelerate technology and national security in a way that it'll stay ahead of all of these threats. And I've been obsessed with the speed issue for years, but that has become, for me, the central thesis of what Booz Allen needs to do, what our nation needs to do, and what all of us need to help.
And what will it take to put the foot on the gas?
A number of things. There's some changes of course, that need to happen in the government, especially in the acquisition space. Acquisition of technology has not kept pace with the development of technology. You know, when you used to buy something that was going to last 50 years, you could take 2 or 3 years to buy it. You could take 5 years to buy it. When you buy something that's going to last 2 years, you cannot take 2 years to buy it. And that needs to happen. But frankly, industry needs to step up too. Industry needs to come off the sidelines. We are, in some ways, allowing these challenges in the acquisition process to give us an excuse to not move faster. And there's a lot each and every one of our companies can do to move faster. I really do believe, I love reading history. You know, when you read The Arsenal of Democracy and what it took for the nation to get ready to win World War II, it took industry changing drastically to operate much faster. And that's what we need to do again.
So if a conflict were to erupt soon, are you saying that the U.S. would not be in a position to effectively defend?
I'm saying that the faster we move, the less likely a conflict will come soon. I think the goal really should be dialogue and deterrence. But part of deterrence is being able to fight effectively and increasingly in the digital world to operate inside an adversary's decision cycle.
You have now started this Booz Allen Corporate Venture Capital. What are you hoping this fund will do?
So this is part of the whole speed argument, if you will, in a couple of different ways. First of all, startups have great technologies. They're trying things that have never been tried before. And there's a lot of them. And they're very well capitalized in a way that, say, DARPA could not try all of the things that the startup community is already trying. So we can move much faster if instead of trying to reinvent these things, we take advantage of what's already trying to come to life in the startup community. The challenge, as you pointed out in the intro, is if you're a very small startup, first of all, how do you even get introduced into the national security ecosystem? How do you actually then get your technology tried? And if you're successful, the technology is great. How do you scale it? And that last point to me is the most challenging one, is how do you scale these technologies? Because everything looks great in the lab. Everything looks great as a one-off. If you have to now make it work around the world 24/7, and it's got to work in the North Pole, and it's got to work in space, and it's got to work underwater, and you're a startup with 8 people, that's a little hard. We believe we can help close that gap.
Well,
because we have the relationships and the know-how, we understand the missions, and we specialize in bringing technology into these missions at the speed of the mission. That's what we do, not just with startups, but across the board. What the CVC allows us to do is to make a commitment in the form of an investor that says to a startup, you know, we're really with you all the way, and we're even willing to put our capital into this bet on your technology and on your people.
So you differ from a traditional venture capital fund in that you're trying to make that connection for them. You're not just giving them the money, you're giving them access, theoretically, to the U.S. government. Is that right?
Correct. I mean, we're helping them co-develop the solution. We're helping them take the solution to market. We're integrating their solution into sometimes bigger, broader tech stacks that solve actual mission problems. We're learning from them. We're being taught by them a number of things. We're teaching as well. And in some ways, unlike a venture firm, the capital investment is the point. We're not trying to get a return on that capital as the primary reason that we invest. We're using the investment as a way to seal the partnership. And so our objectives are to help these technologies see success. And then, you know, we'll get a return on investment when we do it, which is very different. No, we're not going to out-invest a VC fund. You know, we're smart, but they're smart too. They do this for a living and we don't. What we're really trying to do is, again, accelerate our own efforts at bringing new technologies by leveraging all of this great intellectual capital that is already sitting out there.
So I've heard more than once that big firms stymie innovation by coming in and buying up startups who they might see as potential competitors down the road, and then essentially quashing and eliminating that innovation.
Sure.
That's not your game. That's not what you're doing.
We're not a product firm, so we're not trying to take what they do and bring it into our own products and make them disappear. We're helping them be successful. Typically, if we do invest, we're a small investor. So none of those things apply to us. And again, our goal is to say, so we're working with a company that compresses AI algorithms, for example. We were an early investor in their technology. Why is that important? Because when you're operating at the edge in potentially a compromised electromagnetic environment, you can't have these large algorithms available. So if you can compress them, you can make them work faster on smaller footprints, you can deliver them much closer to the edge. But it's not just about their technology. It's about the entire tech stack that is going to make that available to a warfighter operating in the front lines. Our interest is in helping our clients build that solution and deliver that solution to the warfighter, which this particular technology may be a key differentiator. But we're not trying to own all of the technology. We're trying to make sure that the solution is integrated in a way that if one of our young men and women who's out there can actually get better understanding of the environment around them and we can bring them home safe, that's what we're about.
What are some of the other technologies you've invested in thus far?
Most of our investments have been in AI or cyber. And these are two areas that Booz Allen has a lot of expertise in. We are the largest AI provider to the federal government. Right now, we have one of the largest cyber workforces in North America. And so we tend to look for technologies that can help the work that we're doing happen faster, happen more effectively. And again, these are relatively small companies with amazing people and amazing technologies, and we're going to help them scale.
I read that one of the firms you invested in was the firm that located the infamous Chinese surveillance balloon.
Absolutely, yeah. Reveal AI, yeah, great company. It's a great story for, again, what a technology can do, and the evolution of their own thinking is also very telling, because they really started creating synthetic data sets to train models. And then they discovered that the model that we're using to create the synthetic data sets could also help you identify things that have never been seen before, like a spy balloon. And they could actually use that technology to track that across. So really exciting types of technologies. But again, I mean, the real power is if you can take that and marry it with some other things we're working on, with some algorithms that we are creating, and put it all together, then you can give an analyst a full toolkit that they can use to operate so much faster than they operate today.
What about space? Are you making any investments there?
We made our first small investment there recently. And again, I mean, it's because we believe that will integrate in our broader suite of geospatial technologies.
Have any of the companies you've put money into gotten government contracts, or do they do it all as becoming part of the Booz Allen packet?
Both. Sometimes they had contracts even before we invested, and they're doing their thing. Sometimes we're helping them find new clients, introducing them to new clients, and sometimes they're helping us because their technologies are very unique, and us having access to them allows us to do work we could not do on our own.
So you mentioned a lot of your investment is in AI, a lot swirling these days about responsible practices
right.
in AI. What steps are you taking to make sure that your company and the companies you're partnering with are acting ethically and responsibly?
So this is a great question. This is absolutely central to, I believe that the way to scale AI in national security is to focus on creating trust. And that trust will come from elements of transparency, will come from elements of governance, ultimately will come from having the ability to be able to trace how decisions were made and why decisions were made and having auditability. And so we're working on our own processes to do that. We work with our clients to define that. We have a very robust governance model for AI internal to Booz Allen. One of the investments is in a company called Credo AI that actually focuses on creating the workflows to make sure that when you deploy them all, it's done not just ethically, but in conformance with very rapidly changing regulatory frameworks. So for example, nowadays, if you use AI in recruiting to scan resumes, for example, there are certain states that actually forbid that. So
because of bias built into the systems?
Because they're afraid that there could be bias built into the systems. And so if you're looking at a gigantic database of resumes, you want to make sure that your model is excluding those that come from states where you're not allowed to do that. And Credo does that. And the reason that this is really important is that these regulations are changing so rapidly that no one company is actually going to be able to keep up with all of that unless you're using technology to solve that very problem.
Do you think that these sorts of internal rules and regulations that you've set up are enough? Does it make you nervous in any way to hear Congress talking about imposing guardrails?
It doesn't make me nervous. I think it's the right thing to do.
You do?
Yeah. I mean, I think that all of these new technologies have huge positives and huge challenges. We have not found a technology yet that cannot be used or misused in malicious ways. I always tell the story, right? I mean, it took about 100 years from the invention of the telephone to telemarketing. But it takes now about 100 days from, you know, it probably took only a few months from AI to the whole adversarial AI field sprouting out. And I think I'm a technology optimist. And at the same time, I think it's really important that any and all of us understand when we launch a new technology, what are the downsides of that technology? And I think Congress can and should and must play a role in all of that. I think that, you know, we're, again, as you go through elections, the challenges with deepfakes and all of these things, there's a real place for a stronger regulatory framework around these new technologies, and the time is now.
You talked about your fund as being a way to deal with a very slow procurement process within government. But basically, does that procurement process have to change, in your view, in this rapidly changing environment?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that this is, my argument is not that the procurement process doesn't have to change. It absolutely does, because it's, look, again, if you go back in history, the core of the procurement process that exists today was built in the 1920s. So we're talking about 100 years ago. It was built in response to a sense that in World War I, a number of companies were profiteering from that conflict. And so the process was built around transparency and around risk reduction. And it was not built around speed. And transparency is critical. Risk reduction is important. But without speed, we still lose. And so we need to inject speed into this conversation. My argument is not that that doesn't have to change. My argument is the companies should not wait for that to change, that there's things we can do inside the existing process to operate differently. I'll give you an example, and I apologize, I'm a little bit vague on it at this point, but we teamed with a technology company to build something in 45 days that if either one of us had tried to do alone, would have taken us 5 or 6 years. And to go from 5 years to 45 days is a very significant change, right? And I think if you're addressing the needs, for example, in the Pacific around what's happening right now in Taiwan, in the Philippines, in Japan, and you're going to take years to do it, that's not deterrence.
Is all industry willing to embrace this kind of ethos?
No. But significant elements of industry are. I think one of the challenges, again, you talk about the procurement process here's the challenge the Pentagon faces. If you go back 30, 40, 50 years, most innovation for national security was funded by the government and performed inside the government, or a few contractors that had most of their business associated with the government. The Pentagon was their number one customer. If you look at it now, most innovation, especially digital innovation, happens in the private sector. The way this works is you spend a lot of money trying to make something work, and then you have to sell it to as many customers as you possibly can to get a return on your investment. Those are the economics. So now the Pentagon, for the first time in its history, potentially finds itself as one of many buyers of a critical technology. And so they cannot fully dictate the terms. The equities are not fully related to them. And large technology firms have struggled with that. The national security apparatuses struggle with that. My conversations with tech CEOs, there's a core number of CEOs who will say something along the lines of, when the federal government or national security might not be my biggest client, but because I live here, it's my most important one. And those are the companies that we're working with, and those are the companies that we're trying to make this change with. And then you have other companies that, for a number of reasons, are taking a different view or staying on the sidelines and so forth. I really do believe those companies need to come off the sidelines and help.
As we wrap up, could you give us your big thought on just how important innovation is right here and right now to national security?
Absolutely, 100% the difference between keeping our nation safe and not is driven by our country's ability to innovate at speed on some of these topics. Digital innovation is the absolutely central theme for U.S. safety and security and for global stability over the next 20, 40, 50 years. And the government has a big role to play and it needs to transform. And industry in the United States has a big role to play and we need to transform.
Horacio Rozanski, President and CEO of Booz Allen Hamilton. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You've been listening to an episode of NatSec Tech, recorded live at the first AI Summit for National Competitiveness in Washington, D.C. I'm Jean Mazur for the Special Competitive Studies Project. Thanks for joining us for NatSec Tech. We hope you will again. Take care.